This is Prop Points on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Welcome into Prop Points here on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network. Nick Whalen joined not by Jeff Erickson today, but by our good friend, Brandon Kravitz, stepping in for Jeff, who is traveling on this Monday. I know Jeff's got a big Europe trip coming up later this month, Brandon, so you are going to be a regular as my co-host here on Prop Points. Very much looking forward to that. You've been a part of the RotoWire family for many years. You and I co-host our NBA pod together, and you've, of course, been a guest on Prop Points a number of times. So excited, man, to have you in the host chair. We got a packed show coming up for you to kick off the week. The NBA Finals are set. Game one coming our way on Thursday. So we'll dive into some of the player series props for that one. We'll take an early look at game one, give our initial leans, talk some baseball with Adam Thompson. Just a small Monday slate in baseball. Big travel day after a busy weekend. We got seven games coming our way tonight. Adam Thompson for bookies.com going to hand out all of his best bets. And we'll finish out with one of our favorite games, to bet or not to bet NFL future player props. We'll be talking some Brock Bowers, some Jaden Daniels, some Brian Thomas Jr. That coming up to conclude the show. But Brandon, let's start in the NBA. Man, you and I are both NBA guys at heart. You cover the Orlando Magic professionally down in Florida. The Indiana Pacers take care of the Knicks on Saturday night. They win that series in six. We officially have our NBA Finals matchup. We'll dive into the numbers. Of course, OKC, a big favorite in this series. We'll do that in a bit. But I just want to talk about this run by Indiana, Brandon. I just get more and more impressed by this team as the playoffs have rolled along. You know, really nice bounce back on Saturday after what I thought was really their first true no-show of the playoffs in game five.
Yeah, and well, thanks for having me on today. It was a pinch myself moment that you guys asked, so hopefully we can deliver here with the numbers and the picks that you're looking for. 12-4 run throughout the postseason. Their scoring has been off the charts. I think what we've really seen, Nick, is an absolute masterclass from Nick Carlisle and a coming out party for Tyrese Halliburton. And it's kind of weird to say this because this is a team that made it to the Eastern Conference Finals last year, but doesn't this just feel a whole lot different? Maybe it's the fact that they didn't get dusted by the Celtics when they got there, but even the run up to the Eastern Conference Finals felt different because of the efficiency that this team was scoring with. It does feel like they're cooking with something real. It's unfortunate for them that they're going up against the net rating gods of the Oklahoma City Thunder.
Yeah, the way that I described this series last night with Ben Wilson on Cashing Out is, you know, I have immense respect for the Pacers, but really everything Indiana does, OKC just does at a higher level. And you know, we've seen OKC defensively just chew up and spit out so many elite guards during this playoff run. I'm very curious to see how Tyrese Halliburton comes out in game one on Thursday. But how do you view the Pacers now relative to how you viewed them coming into the postseason? Like you said, this was an Eastern Conference Finals team last year. Now they caught a lot of breaks along the way, and that started again in round one against Milwaukee, where you know Dame goes out and the Bucks are just playing terribly, and Kyle Kuzma is coming off the bench to end that series. So I think there was still a little bit of, all right, here we go again. Everything's going the Pacers' way. But by the end of that Cavs series, man, I was ready to buy in.
Yeah, I think at that point, you started to get the feeling like, okay, this might actually be real. For me, it didn't come until a couple of games in. I think when they went up 2-0 on the New York Knicks, I think that was when I said, okay, this team's really cooking with something. I wish that I could say that I saw this coming. They play with such a frenetic pace. They pay no mind to defense. This is throughout the regular season. This was a team that was middle of the pack at best defensively. And I am of the belief that defense wins championships and that you can't, and I mean, not that they're there yet, but they're close. I was of the belief that this team just defensively wasn't going to be able to hang. Now the Milwaukee matchup I pegged from the beginning, I figured that was a good matchup for them. I think they targeted that with the way that they handled things at the end of the regular season. Then they pick up momentum. They get that fortunate Cavs situation where the team was less than 100%, but because we didn't get an all-out effort health-wise from Cleveland, I was a little skeptical when that Knicks series started, but they obviously have something. They belong here, and I think we learn a little bit of something from this. you really can pick a representative, or better yet, bet a representative to make the finals if they're seeded 1 through 6. We used to just dismiss the teams that weren't inside of the top three. I don't think you can do that anymore in this era of the NBA.
Well, I want to give credit not only to Indiana, but OKC as well for the way that they built these teams, right? I think for so long, you know, during my formative years, if you will, Brandon, when I was just grinding, you know, Hornets games in college, it was the super team era, right? And it felt like if you didn't have a super team, if you didn't have at least two, maybe three all-star caliber players on your roster, you had no chance to win an NBA Finals or even feel like you were on the cusp of getting there. But we're in a new era. And you know, I don't think either of these teams necessarily feel like super teams, but I think they are when you factor in all of the depth, especially OKC. I mean, it's just been a masterclass in team building, I think, on both sides. You look at what Indiana did, pulling some really shrewd trades over the last couple of years, bringing in Tyrese Haliburton, sending out Domantas Sabonis, you know, even the trade for Siakam last season when it happened, I was like, all right, you know, this just feels like a middling Eastern Conference team kind of solidifying their future as a middling Eastern Conference team. And it turned out that Pascal Siakam was the perfect fit for what the Pacers want to do. And I think they did a good job identifying a player like him who otherwise they would not be able to get. It's Indiana, right? Like guys like that are not going to come to Indiana in free agency. And they said, this guy won a title. We think this guy could be our second best player. And he absolutely has. You know, you pick up Aaron Nesmith for free. You basically get Andrew Nembhard for free. They've done a great job of grooming some of these role players. And then, I mean, OKC, I don't know what you can even say here. I mean, they've exercise so much patience with all of these assets that we've been talking about for 2-3 years and we'll continue to talk about because they still have a treasure trove coming in the future. Obviously they cashed in the Chet pick at number two, you know, getting SGA and that Paul George trade years ago. That's what really started all of this, but identifying Lu Dort as an undrafted player, you know, recognizing a key weakness last season in Josh Giddey, turning that into a strength, just essentially swapping him straight up for Alex Caruso, going out, paying up for Isaiah Hartenstein in free agency. And then just some of the drafting that this team has done too. To go back to Chet Holmgren, it was not a slam dunk pick necessarily. They took him over Jabari Smith. That certainly looks like it was the right call. Jalen Williams, you know, you get him at number 12. Maybe that was more so just dumb of other teams. Looking at you, Washington Wizards, who took Johnny Davis number 10 in that draft. Identifying Kayson Wallace in the 2024 draft. It's just both of these teams have pulled the right strings over and over in these last 2 or 3 years.
Yeah, and I think the Pacers are a good model for what other NBA teams can do. I really don't think OKC is that. They have hit every beat to such an extreme level and still have so much that's in their chamber. They're dealing with a number of first-round picks in the future. They had a first-round pick, Nikola Topic, didn't even play. So they still have another guy that they can train up to be part of this juggernaut of a team. Getting SGA the way that they did and loading up on picks on top of it is just not something that other teams can replicate. But if other teams around the league are paying attention, and they should be, this is the first time we've seen two teams make it to the NBA Finals that are non-tax teams, then the Pacers, to me, are that mold. You do it via trades, bargains in the draft. I just wonder how much people like this. You know, I think for us hoop heads, this is a fun series, maybe. If Indiana is able to steal a couple of games, do you think fans like the fact that the super team era is now just how deep can you make your roster rather than, hey, let's get a big three in here?
I think they should. I think if you're a true basketball fan, this is significantly better than what we were watching 7 or 8 years ago. I mean, was it fun to see Kevin Durant play alongside Steph Curry for a few years? Yeah, it was fun, but it wasn't competitive. It felt like the season was predetermined before it even started. So I'm glad we're out of that era because, like you said at the top of this discussion, I mean, there are right now there's like 13 teams in the West that feel like they could compete next year. And there's probably at least 6 or 7 in the Eastern Conference. And at the height of the super team era, it felt like you were going into every season saying, all right, there's like maybe 4 or 5 teams that we feel can win the title. And I think the more teams that are in that mix year after year, the better and healthier your league is going to be. I think that's a big part of the reason the NFL, for instance, you know, continues to be the dominant sport because it doesn't feel like it's predetermined. You can't just look at the roster and say, okay, we could pencil this team in to the finals every single year. We'll talk more about this series in a moment, but we have a message from our good friends at RotoWire. Are you still using your buddy's gut instinct as your betting strategy? Come on, you deserve better. RotoWire has the real tools the pros use, rankings, projections, updates, and data that doesn't sleep. Whether you're making picks, setting your fantasy lineup, or placing bets, our award-winning insights give you the edge you need. Get started today by heading over to rotowire.com and entering ROTO15. That's ROTO15. Put that in at checkout, 15% off any of our RotoWire products. Let's take a look at the series pricing, Brandon. OKC, as expected, a hefty favorite. The number is minus 700 right now at DK. Pacers 5-1 to win the series outright. The total games market, to me, is a little more interesting, Brandon. Not a whole lot of sense in land money on OKC minus 700. Over under 5.5 games. Over 5.5 plus 115. Under 5.5 minus 135.
I tend to lean under, but I think the better bet here, you're laying a lot more juice, but to me, Thunder -1.5 in the series, it's minus 275. So you got to lay it.
Okay.
But it's pretty much a lock, as much as, you know, those exist in the betting world. We have not seen but two series go to a game seven in the last 10 to 12 years. Both of those involved all-time great teams, all-time great coaches in the Spurs and the Warriors, and both involved LeBron James. This series does not have that. So I'm fine taking a lesser payout and just guaranteeing myself a win. I don't see the Thunder winning this in seven. That seems like the most unlikely outcome outside of the Pacers winning the series.
All right, well, that gives you OKC in four, OKC in five, OKC in six. You could talk me into that. I think OKC in five is going to be the most common pick, and that exacta right now, plus 250 over at the DK Sportsbook. We got more NBA Finals talk coming your way next. We're going to dive in on some player series props on the other side. That's coming up next here on Prop Points.
Prop Points on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Welcome back into Prop Points here on VSiN. Nick Whalen, Brandon Kravitz here with you on this Monday afternoon. Brandon, we're going to keep diving in on the NBA Finals. Game one coming our way on Thursday night from OKC. Thunder currently sitting as a 9-point favorite. That number was 9.5. Last night, now down to 9 at DraftKings. And like we just told you in the last segment, Thunder, big favorites to win the series, minus 700 on that series line. We're going to take a look at some series-long player props for the NBA Finals. And Brandon, I love evaluating these. You know, sometimes there's value, sometimes there's not, but they're very fun markets to look at. Both teams have played exactly 16 games coming into the finals. So you can compare those aggregate numbers and try to find some takeaways. We'll go through all the primary stat categories. We'll start with points here, where we have an overwhelming favorite in SGA to lead the finals in total points. SGA minus 3,500 to be the leader. Jalen Williams 25-1, Siakam 28-1, Halliburton 60-1, and then a big jump down to some role players. McConnell 200-1. That would be shocking. Lou Dort 200-1. Chet Holmgren, Andrew Nembhard also in that category. So this is a tough one for me to find value, Brandon. I mean, SGA has scored 476 points in the postseason, 149 more than any other player on this OKC roster. Now, on the Indy side, Siakam leads the Pacers with 337 points. That's 36 more than Halliburton, 84 more than Miles Turner. So it's tough to look anywhere other than SGA on the OKC side of things. Is there any name when you parse through the odds here who sticks out to you as you know, any sort of value? Because I'm not betting SGA at minus 3,500. I'll tell you that.
Yeah, that's ridiculous. Just take OKC to win the series and be done with it if you're willing to lay juice like that. My exact note that I wrote down for this was I don't see any value here. So I'm with you in lockstep. Okay. It's SGA in a landslide. The only one that I would even consider outside of him would be Pascal Siakam. He's the next closest in terms of total points this postseason. 337 to SGA's 476 over the course of the playoffs. 28-1. I guess there are worse ways to get in on the action in this series, but I think we're in agreement. This feels like a wasted bet.
All right. We had to confirm. Probably a no bet for the series points leader. Gets a lot more interesting, though, when we get into some of the ancillary categories. Let's move over to the three-pointers made leader markets. And we have a favorite here, but not an overwhelming favorite. Tyrese Haliburton, minus 125. Aaron Nesmith, plus 425. Lou Dort, 6-1. SGA, Miles Turner, Jalen Williams, all 11-1. You get Nembhard at 20-1. Chet and Caruso, 30-1. Siakam, not a high volume 3-point shooter, he is 40-1.
Well, I have a feeling you're going to go Haliburton here, so I'm going a different direction. I'm going to go with Jalen Williams at 11-1. I like the payout there. He was knocking down 2.5 threes per game against the Minnesota Timberwolves. He's shooting 46% from deep over his last five games, so I would think they're going to keep feeding him from long range. Your thoughts?
I think value-wise, that's fine at 11-1. I was actually surprised to find that Lou Dort leads OKC in three-point attempts. And that part of it necessarily wasn't surprising, but he has 17 more attempts than any other player on this team in the postseason. He has 102 total. Williams has 85, SGA 80, Chet 72, Caruso 65. And we've had a different leader in each series in terms of total made threes for the Thunder. Chet had the most in round one against Memphis. Caruso and Dort co-led with 15 makes apiece against Denver. That was a disaster shooting series for OKC. And Jalen Williams had the most threes in the West Finals with 12. You know, it's interesting that neither of these teams are overly three-point dependent. They're not crazy high-volume teams, but Indy has shot the three significantly better than OKC has so far. Pacers are right around 40%. OKC closer to 33%. For the postseason. So I think there's maybe a little bit more value on the Pacers if you think that shooting continues. Now, Haliburton leads Indy in attempts. He has 28 more than Aaron Nesmith in the postseason. He is just shooting 33% from three. However, Nesmith is shooting 50% even for the playoffs. We saw Nesmith lead in round one and round two. Haliburton and Nesmith co-led in the Eastern Conference Finals. So I do think if we assume that Aaron Nesmith has time to recover from that ankle, which was clearly bothering him at the end of the Knicks series, I think there's some value on Aaron Nesmith at plus 425.
I'm glad you brought that up. But right now, Nesmith, to this point, has the most three-pointers of the remaining players in playoffs, 43. Hallie's at 38, so feel like there's some good value. You're getting plus 425 on Aaron Nesmith. Now, part of the reason why he was as good as he was in the last series is because of what he did in game one. I don't know how repeatable that is for anyone ever. But if you're just looking for somebody else, you want to bet this prop and you don't want to bet Hallie, I get it, because we know the Hallie goose egg is coming in this series. He does it every single series. Yes. He did it throughout the regular season. This is the reason he was voted as one of the most overrated players in the NBA, because when he gets tentative, he's not the same player. And OKC is very well equipped to make you feel tentative. So I worry about that. Now, if he just settles for threes and happens to cash that way, that's a way to get there on Haliburton. But I'm good staying away from Hallie as far as this prop goes.
I don't even know if settling for threes is going to be an option the way that they're going to throw bodies at him. I mean, this OKC team is designed to slow down elite guards, right? They might struggle with someone like Jokic. Everybody does. But seeing what they did to Anthony Edwards in the West Finals, I think we could see a similar script play out to a guy who's significantly less aggressive game to game than Edwards. I mean, just the amount of bodies that OKC could throw at Tyrese Haliburton, that scares me a little bit if I'm a Pacers fan heading into the finals. Let's take a look at rebounds, Brandon. This is another one where, you know, market is significantly closer than points. We have Chet Holmgren minus 185, a sizable favorite. Hartenstein, his teammate, plus 195. Siakam, plus 550. J-Dub 13-1, SGA 22-1, Haliburton 40-1. Now, neither of these teams are elite on the glass. They're both bottom half of the NBA in defensive rebound percentage in these playoffs. You know, OKC's better on the glass than they were last year, but that's, you know, still not saying all that much. Basically a middle of the road rebounding team during the regular season. One thing I did note, though, however, Brandon, is that OKC is a much better offensive rebounding team. Indy has been the worst offensive rebounding team in these playoffs, dead last in both offensive rebound percentage, total offensive rebounds, and offensive rebounds per 100 possessions. They have the same number of offensive rebounds in these playoffs as the Cavaliers, who have played seven fewer games at this point than the Pacers. So where do you look in this market?
The Pacers actually did a much better job on the boards against the Knicks than I thought they were going to. So there's some encouragement there that they're not going to get completely housed in that department. But to me, it's I Heart or nothing at plus 195. Just give me the Thunder. Any Thunder big with plus money, and that's I Heart. Chet Holmgren's at minus 185. I think a Thunder big man is going to lead the series in rebounds. And like you mentioned, you get some of those freebies with the offensive boards. If the Thunder are really going to run Indiana off the floor in this series. I think it comes through rebounding and specifically getting second chance opportunities.
All right, we'll take a look at the assist market in a moment. But first, you want to bet smarter this football season? Become a VSiN Pro subscriber today and get a full year for just $199 plus a free pre-order of the NFL Sharp Betting Playbook by Josh Applebaum, a no-nonsense guide to reading the market, spotting sharp action, and making smarter NFL bets. Sign up now and you'll get instant access to a daily email with all the best bets from VSiN hosts and their guests, real-time betting splits from DraftKings and Circa, 24/7 access to video on the VSiN Watch app, plus our 25-26 NFL betting guide, which drops on July 1st. Don't miss out on this limited time offer. Head over to vsin.com/subscribe and use that promo code BOOK, B-O-O-K, to sign up. That's vsin.com/subscribe. Nick Whalen, Brandon Kravitz here with you on Prop Points, taking a look at some player futures markets for the NBA Finals. Assist leader, Brandon, this is one where we do have a hefty favorite. Tyrese Haliburton, -900 to lead the finals in assists. SGA, 5-1. Nembhard, 20-1. Jalen Williams, 50-1. Everybody else, at least 100-1. Haliburton, of course, leads the entire NBA in assists in the postseason with 156. That's 30 more than any other player. That's 45 more than SGA. And again, these teams have both played exactly 16 games. Andrew Nembhard did out-assist Haliburton in the Cavs series, Brandon. I was surprised to discover that, but he's blowing everybody else out of the water in the other two rounds. Had 42 more assists than Andrew Nembhard in that Knicks series alone. But like we just talked about, the Thunder are going to get after the Pacers and Haliburton defensively. Would you look anywhere other than Tyrese Haliburton in this market?
Definitely not. This is very much SGA with the points. You can bet this. He's lapping the field, but you're just not going to get much back for it. The next closest is SGA with 111. He's at 156, as you mentioned, but both of these teams use everyone. And Haliburton is so much more responsible for generating Pacers looks than SGA is. I tried to see if I could parlay SGA as the points leader and Tyrese Haliburton as the assist leader, just to see what kind of number I would get. But unfortunately, you cannot parlay those options. So saved you some time out there.
I will say this. There's a case for SGA at 5-1. He is averaging 15.3 potential assists per game in the playoffs. Haliburton's at just 16.1. Yeah, the issue is that OKC is just not converting those assist chances because they're shooting 33% from three. So I think this market should actually be a little bit closer. And I will say Jalen Williams, 50-1. That would be my long shot here. SGA has 19 more assists than Jalen Williams in the Western Conference Finals. But prior to that, it was close through the first two rounds. Williams at least 5 assists in 13 of 16 playoff games. Switching over to baseball when we come back, Adam Thompson's going to join us for some best bets in the MLB. Stay tuned. Watch your prop points.
You're watching Prop Points on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Welcome back to Prop Points here on the Sports Betting Network. Nick Whalen, Brandon Kravitz hanging out with you on this Monday afternoon. We're taking you up to 3 p.m. Eastern. Make it rain with Adam Schein coming up after us, as always, on the network. He's going to have Greg Peterson from VSiN on the show, giving out his best bets for this Monday night MLB slate. We're going to talk some baseball ourselves here with our friend Adam Thompson. He joins us on the Progressive Guest Line. You can find his work over at bookies.com. You can find all of his picks over at Bookies Plus each day. You can get those emailed directly to you for free. Go check it out over at Bookies and give him a follow on Twitter at the ATM Bets. Adam, welcome to the show, man. Looking forward to seeing what you have on the card tonight. Bit of a small slate, but still plenty of intriguing games. We'll start with the Mets and the Dodgers, two of the best teams in the National League. Paul Blackburn taking on Dustin May, who's been a strikeout machine lately. I know you're looking at the first five for this one.
Yeah, first five, and you start with the Dodgers. You know, they're at home, 6.5 runs per game they are averaging at home. That is ridiculous. They lead the league in runs scored. They lead the league in home runs. They lead the league in batting average. That is ridiculous also. And the Mets have the same record. So, you know, the Mets aren't a slouch, but the Mets are doing it because they have the best pitching staff right now in baseball. So they're throwing Paul Blackburn, who hasn't thrown in 10 months against this Dodgers lineup. That makes it a little more interesting. The Mets bullpen about a 2 ERA the last few weeks. So I'm looking at first five. It's minus 155 is the money line for the game on the Dodgers. It's only 10 points higher first five innings. Dustin May, I think he's got enough to get it done. Mets offense is about 10th ranked in a lot of things. So I think you can start with first five innings. I think that's good enough. At almost the same odds as a full nine innings. But the Paul Blackburn part pushes me towards the Dodgers and an early bet on those first five.
Let's head out west, talk about the Padres and the Giants. The Padres have been excellent this season. They feel like a true World Series contender. A lot of that coming defensively. Their pitching has been fantastic. Their defense is top-notch, and they have all the star power needed. You don't often see them listed as heavy underdogs. So what are you doing with this line here?
Yeah, it's because Logan Webb is pitching, and he's a dynamo, especially at home. 1.39 ERA in five starts at home this season. His worst outing, though, this season was against the Padres. It was at Petco, but he gave up five runs in five innings over the last 12 games. Meanwhile, this Giants offense, no offense has been worse. They're averaging under 2.5 runs per game over the last few weeks. That is by far the worst. Steven Kolick is on the mound for the Padres. That's not the star power that Logan Webb is, but his ERA on the road, 1.33. So he can match him pound for pound when you look at those home road splits. And like you said, you know, that Padres offense, they can blow up at any time. You know, they went through a slump. They're now through that slump. They're playing well again. The Giants are in the midst of a horrible slump. And you look at the odds, plus 150 for these San Diego Padres. That's a number that jumps out to you. And, you know, you could say, sure, the Giants should win. They might win. But talk about value. San Diego Padres, that offense, and a pitcher who's a dynamite on the road, plus 150 with San Diego. You can't pass that up.
Let's take a look at your team, Adam, the Milwaukee Brewers, the hottest team in baseball right now. They've won seven in a row, coming off of consecutive sweeps over the Red Sox and then the Phillies this weekend. They now travel to Cincinnati. Aaron Civale on the hill going up against Brady Singer. Do have some questions with regard to this Brewers team. Will Christian Yelich be out there? Unclear at this point. Took a ball off the hand yesterday. X-rays did return negative, but could see the Brewers, you know, playing it cautious with Yelich tonight. Nonetheless, Adam, I know you like the Brewers to push this winning streak up to eight.
Yeah, I mean, you're getting almost even money. They're actually underdogs in this matchup. They've won seven in a row. They just swept the Red Sox. Then they went at home. They went to Philly, swept them, outscored them, I think, 28-11 in three games. And the Phillies are good. The Phillies are legit. Now they go to Cincy. Cincy is struggling lately. Brady Singer is on the mound. I like Brady Singer, but in his last seven starts, he has an ERA just over five. So he can be had. The Reds actually score more runs on the road than they do at home. Their home offense isn't as good as it is on the road. And like you mentioned, Aaron Civale is pitching. He gave up one run in five innings in his last start, and the bullpen is good enough. I think it all comes down to, you know, the Brewers are the hottest team right now. You're getting plus odds for them, even if it's in Cincy. And I like Brady Singer, like I said, but he's not throwing particularly, you know, dominating right now. He took on these Brewers in Milwaukee earlier this season, gave up five runs in five innings. So again, it's a good matchup for Milwaukee. You're right, Yelich may or may not be there, but this offense is humming. It's not just him. He's playing lights out right now. There's no doubt about it. But other guys are stepping up as well. So I think 1-9, this is still the better lineup. And when you have Brady Singer kind of struggling right now and Civale pitching well, we'll see how long he goes. But you're getting Milwaukee, a team on a 7-game winning streak at plus odds. I think that's worth at least a sprinkle.
Got a fun one at Fenway tonight. Over under sitting at 9.5, one of the highest totals of the evening. It looks like the Angels are taking some sharp action in this one, despite the fact that they've lost and failed to cover in two straight games. So should we be backing Tyler Anderson and the Halos here?
I'm going to go no, actually. I'm going to go the opposite of a lot of other people. I like Richard Fitz, who's going for Boston. You know, he opened the year with three strong starts. Went on the IL for 6 weeks, came back through only three innings, but it was like exceptional in those three innings. Top 97 on his pitch. I think he'll be stretched out a little further than that. He's got no run support when he's gone. He's 0-2 on the season, despite having, you know, either quality starts when he goes six or not allowing a run when he goes under six. But Tyler Anderson, you know, he's been strong for the Angels, but he was strong at the start, especially that strong start has kind of slowed. He's 0-2 with a 4.12 ERA over his last seven starts. On the road, his ERA is nearly five. Boston averages over five runs per game at home. That's the fifth best mark in baseball. So I think you put it together, Boston, it's about minus 145, which is a little steep, all things considered, because LA is not hitting the ball poorly. But I think they can get it done at home. I think that's the key.
Hey, VSiN fans, how would you like to play the Circa Survivor or Circa Million contest for free this season? Winner Circle Proxy is giving away one free $1,000 entry to each contest, plus full proxy service. And get this, you'll be paired with a VSiN host for strategy all season long. Enter now for your chance to win. Just visit winnerscircleproxy.com/VSiN. That's winnerscircleproxy.com/VSiN. Talk with Adam Thompson from bookies.com, handing out some of his favorite plays for Monday night's Major League Baseball slate. Adam, we got the Twins in Sacramento, not Oakland, taking on the Athletics. Joe Ryan going up against Luis Severino. A month ago, I was all over this A's team, Adam. They were 20-16 at one point. They are now 23-37. So you can do the math. It has not been a good month of May and even early June already for this Athletics team. Are we continuing to pounce on their opponent here? Do you like the Twins tonight?
Yeah, I think so. And I, you know, I like the A's as well. I saw what they were doing. It was working. Now it's not working at all. They've won one of their last 18 games. That's not good. And speaking of not good, Luis Severino, another pitcher who I actually like, at home 0-4 with a 6.20 ERA. He hates Sacramento as much as the A's owner probably does right now. So, you're going against Joe Nathan, who in his last six starts, he's allowed six runs in 36 innings. So he's going long in games. This Minnesota team is inconsistent. It's bugged me. It's burned me in the past, but I think they get it done here. I think Severino at home has struggled. That bullpen has been atrocious the last 4 weeks, and ERA well over seven. So I think you put those two things together, I think Minnesota can score enough runs, and Nathan can do the rest, I think.
All right, let's wrap with this one. German Marquez takes on Max Meyer down in South Florida tonight. This is actually one of my favorite plays of the day. I'll give you some more info on that later on in the show, like the under in that one. I wish they were keeping the roof open for this game. It looks like they're not, but it's much more about how horrendous these lineups have been. What is it that you like about the Rockies starter tonight?
Yeah, this is a, you know, this is a wild, I guess, you know, because Marquez 0-4 with a 9.42 ERA on the road. At night, his ERA balloons to over 10. And yet I like over 17.5 outs for Marquez tonight. He has settled down actually in his last four starts. In three of them, he's gone 6-7 innings and allowed just 1-2 runs. And that was against the Padres, the Phillies, and the Giants. Marlins, they scored three runs all series in a three-game series against the Giants last week. They're 26 in homers. Marquez only has two games in his 11 starts. They even allowed a single homer. So I think this suits well for him. I think if he's pitching well, the Colorado bullpen is just as bad as the rest of the team. So if Marquez keeps it going and he's rolling, they're going to let him go 6 or 7 innings, and he's over that number.
I like it. I like it, Adams. Like, Marquez might not be good, but the bullpen is even worse. So there we go. The over 17.5 outs for German Marquez. That is for the 9-50 Colorado Rockies. Adam Thompson, everybody. Check him out on Twitter, at the ATM Bets. Find him at bookies.com. We got some NFL player futures to discuss coming up next here on Prop Points.
Prop Points on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Welcome back to Prop Points here on VSiN. Nick Whalen, Brandon Kravitz. One more segment bringing you home on this Monday afternoon. As always, Make It Rain with Adam Schein coming up next here on the Sports Betting Network. Brandon, we've talked NBA Finals. We just had Adam Thompson give out some best bets for tonight's Major League Baseball slate. Got to talk a little football, man. We are less than 100 days away from the first NFL Sunday of the year. Never too early to start looking into some player futures markets. And you're going to play a little game of to bet or not to bet. So I will give you a player future. Brandon, you tell me if you are betting this or you are not betting this. And we will start out in Washington, to bet or not to bet Jaden Daniels over 23.5 passing touchdowns in 2025. That's minus 110 at DK.
Nick, I'm going to bet it. Coming off of one of the best rookie seasons that we have ever seen, and now with the added help, Deebo Samuel coming over from San Francisco, so things should open up even more for Daniels. I'm sure that it appears like it would be the sharp look to say, year two regression, he's going to go through a sophomore slump. We saw it with CJ Stroud to a degree. But I think this guy is as good as advertised. So he surpassed this last year. I think he's going to get even better. I don't think we're going to see that year two regression, not with the way they're building things in Washington. So I will slam bet on the over.
You know, I think we could see some level of regression here, and I think he could still go over this number. I mean, Jaden Daniels finished his rookie year with 25 passing touchdowns. 16 of those came in the final six games of the regular season. Like, we started to see a more comfortable version of Jaden Daniels over the second half. And I think the other factor there is that he was playing through the rib injury. He was running less during that portion of the year. And I think that's the plan long-term for as dynamic as he is as a runner. He's still very slight. This is not a Cam Newton body style that we're talking about here. So I think ideally Washington is throwing 25 to 30 touchdowns as opposed to having Daniels, you know, carry the ball 8 to 15 times per game. And I don't know if he gets to 6 rushing touchdowns like he did a year ago, but I'm with you on this one. As long as he stays healthy, that's the big concern with any of these player futures. If he stays healthy, I think 23.5, a very attainable number for the reigning rookie of the year. All right, next on the list, Brandon, to bet or not to bet Derrick Henry over 1,350.5 yards on the ground next season. This one also minus 110.
Love me some Derrick Henry, but this has to be a don't bet. This is going to be an ugly sweat if you got it, but I think you have to look towards the under here. Henry is a beast, but just given the nature of the position and the fact that he is 31 years old, he looks like he defies space and time, but he's still a running back that is entering into his 30s or beyond entering into his 30s. The under is the only way to look. I know that this guy just ran for over 1,900 yards, and maybe he does it again, but over the course of his career, a great season typically is followed by a mediocre one by his standards. So he'd be due to slide back a little bit. You also do have to layer in the injury for any running back. I think it's hard to take running back overs in general just because of the nature of the position, but certainly between that and the age and the fact that he just blew up to the most extreme degree a year ago, got to look the other way for Derrick Henry.
I know, man. I've made the same case for Saquon Barkley as well. And it's like, you look at last season for both of these guys, and there's nothing to indicate that they shouldn't repeat that. It's just history. It is very, very rare to exceed 2,000 yards in Saquon's case, or almost get there in Henry's case, and then match that the next season. But we're also talking about a lower bar here. 1,350, it feels extremely low for Derrick Henry. He's going to get there if he plays 17 games. That's the thing. You're essentially saying, I think he might miss 3, 4, 5 games, maybe more. I mean, I guess he did go under this number in 17 games in 2023, but that was a member of a disastrous Tennessee Titans offense. He went over in 2022 in 16 games, was well on pace to go over in 2021 before an injury, played about 8.5 games that year. So to me, it really just comes down to how healthy do you think Derrick Henry will be. He eclipsed this mark in just 13 games, by the way, a year ago, and had under 85 yards in 6 of those 13. So how many games do you think Derrick Henry misses? That probably dictates whether or not you are betting this. Next on the list, this is a fun one, Brandon, because we have literally never seen this player not hit this prop. To bet or not to bet Mike Evans over 925.5 receiving yards.
Bet. If you bet the under on this, you are the thief of joy. He's only finished with, I don't know, 1,000 yards in every season. He's played all 11 of them, and you have not much changing in Tampa Bay, a shift in terms of the offensive coordinator, but anybody who takes over that job is just going to say, Mike Evans, go do your thing. Personnel-wise, you add Emeka Egbuka, but he's not going to eat into Mike Evans' volume. They're different players. Injury is the only reason that this doesn't go over, because if it does happen, because we've just seen him do this every single year of his career. And given where the number is set, You don't even need them to get to 1,000. You just need them to get to 926. So I'm taking that every single day of the week and twice on Sunday.
Like you said, he's done it 11 straight seasons to begin his career. Just barely got there. Needed a little help at the end of the season, but did that in 14 games. They forced it. So,
Baker Mayfield's willing to do that too.
Yeah, he is. He is. I think this is a bigger health question to me than even Derrick Henry, just because we're talking about a guy who's 32 years old, a guy who's had injuries throughout his career. Now, you know, they tend to have occurred like later in seasons, so it hasn't necessarily robbed him of this streak. But you got to keep in mind, this is a loaded receiver core. They don't necessarily need 1,200 yards out of Mike Evans. You get Chris Godwin back in the mix. You picked up Emeka Ebuka in the draft. You still have Jalen McMillan, who was fantastic at the end of the year. Bucky Irving, Rashad White, both of those guys catch passes. So I'm more in pass territory on Mike Evans. Call me the thief of joy if you want, Brandon, but I think this might be the year the streak finally snaps. All right, next one. To bet or not to bet, Brock Bowers, over 4.5 receiving touchdowns in year two. This one, minus 110.
I am going to say don't bet. This is a sharp line. He had 5 last year in year one of his career, but there's just too much uncertainty to make this bet confidently. New coaching staff, new offensive coordinator, and Chip Kelly. Mm-hmm. I have no feel for how he's going to use the tight end position. We know Brock Bowers is going to get targets. He's going to get receptions. I don't worry about that. But how's he going to be utilized in the red zone? And you also have a not so tight end friendly quarterback in Geno Smith. I was going back some prior years for Geno. You know, you got the Will Disleys of the world that would pop off here and there, but this is not a guy that throws the ball a ton to tight ends in the road, in the red zone. So if we're not racking up touchdowns here, then we're not going to get there. Bowers is great. I would just prefer to attack receptions or yards for Brock Bowers.
See, I think I'd almost prefer to attack touchdowns here. I think the yardage, you know, the volume is something that could be in a little bit more danger. You got a new coaching staff, a new quarterback. I mean, the Raiders were, what, 4th in the NFL in total pass attempts last season. I think you're ideally closer to middle of the road. You're not trailing in as many games as they were. You have a better running game to lean on with Ashton Jeanty. And the Raiders were 27th in the NFL last season, Brandon, in red zone attempts. Only made it to the red zone 45 times. That's about 12, 13 fewer than league average. Bowers only had 14 red zone targets on the year. That was 10th in the NFL among tight ends. Hunter Henry had more red zone targets than Brock Bowers. But interestingly, 4 of his 5 touchdowns as a rookie did come from outside the red zone. He had a 57-yarder, a 22-yarder, 23, 33, and then a 12-yard touchdown is only in the red zone. So maybe they don't need those red zone possessions, but I think there will be more of those at least this season for the Raiders. All right, real quick, before we get to our G-Bank best bets of the night, Brandon, Brian Thomas, over 6.5 receiving touchdowns. Do you like this one or not? Got to keep it short.
I love it. I'm going to bet this. Those 10 touchdowns he had last year were not a fluke. I think he's already one of the best receivers in the NFL. And I would say that this correlates, by the way. If you look at Travis Hunter unders, I think that that is what's one of my favorite preseason plays. 750.5 receiving yards for a guy that we have no idea how he's going to be utilized. And he might play defense. I'll take the under on that all day. But Brian Thomas Jr. should have no issue with this.
Yep, I'm with you. Fading Travis Hunter, at least as of now. All right, we got to give you some G-Bank best bets of the night to wrap up the show. They're brought to you by G-Bank and introducing the $500 trifecta from G-Bank First Bet in VSiN. All you got to do is open a new G-Bank Visa Signature credit card in the first 90 days, deposit and play through $1,000 at first bet to trigger that $500 trifecta. You'll get $200 in cashback rewards on your G-Bank Visa Signature credit card. First bet will give you a $100 deposit match, and Visa completes the trifecta with a free Visa Pro subscription through August 31st. That's a $200 value. It's the $500 trifecta from G-Bank First Bet and Visa. Head over to VSiN.com/GBank. That's VSIN.com/GBank. This one-time promotion is limited to customers opening a new account in response to this offer and will not apply to requests to convert existing accounts. Apply today. Terms and conditions apply. Brandon Kravitz, your first GBank best bet of your career is
Rockies Marlins under 8 runs scored. These offenses are terrible, so I will look to continue to fade offensive production. I wish the roof was open. They're closing it, but we'll still take the under at 8 runs.
Man, well, if that doesn't come through, Brandon, we at least can blame the roof. I'm just going to get an early bet in on this series for the NBA Finals. OKC to win the series 4-1, plus 250 at the DK Sportsbook. That's going to wrap it for the Monday edition of Prop Points here on VSiN. Stay tuned. Make it rain with Adam Schein coming your way next.